Chof Amral. Chof Amral.
Okay.
Four lengths from the very top by the two dots. Amli Rapa. Amli Rapapa Labaye. So Rapapa asks a valid question. He asks, Mashno Rishonim, comparing the current generation, at least then, to the previous generations, he didn't understand something. How come in the previous generations, in the Shana Rishonim, this Rachish Lehu Nisa, tremendous Nisim and the flows, tremendous miracles occur in that generation? Mashna Anan Lomis Rachish La Nisa. And why, when it comes to us, we don't really see any miracles? What's the reason? What tzchus does the previous generation have that we're lacking? So we have to look. We have to compare ourselves. So he said, listen, if it's because of our learning, maybe it's because we just don't learn
as good as they did,
right? So, or as many subjects as they did. So he says, no, it's not true, because Shnei Rabbi Yehuda, in days and years of Rabbi Yehuda, which of course was one of the individuals who is comparing himself to, which what Rabbi Yehuda was from the Shana Rishonim, in those days, Kulei Tnui B'Nezikin Habi, the people, all they did was focus on Seder Nezikin, Baba Kama, Baba Tzia, Baba Basra, that's what they were learning. That was all their focus, and they didn't go beyond that. Va'anan kamas nisan shisha sidri. However, for us, we learn all shas, right? So certainly when it comes to the quantity of learning, we learn a lot more. A lot more stuff.
Lamdi is better why the Ness was then, what Ness is even now. You can't compare nisan. What were the nisan then, in that time? What are the nisan in the other one's times? And then if you want to go a step further, say, what is a Ness today? What a Ness was then is not a Ness today.
Yeah, but if you want to go to the Nisim, I mean, let's face it, the big Nisim time in Jerusalem was Yetzias Mitzrayim and coming to Eretz Yisrael and the Kibbush. And after that,
but that's what you're comprehending as a Ness. But the going through the Midbar of Eretz Yisrael traveling that far, imagine it. That in itself is a Ness.
That's what I said. So I said, from the time Yetzias Mitzrayim, till we conquered Eretz Yisrael, when most of the Nisim happened. What's happened since then?
What do you mean what happened since then?
What Nisim, I mean, the Nisim every day, the 6 day wars, but we're talking about, you know, the kind of Nisim where Hashem showed himself to Yisrael. He split the Red Sea. The walls came down.
You're going to call that a Ness, or that was an occurrence that HaKadosh Baruch Hu brought about? You can't get, what is a Ness? A Ness is a miracle. HaKadosh Baruch Hu appeared on Har Sinai, you can call that a Ness. That wasn't it. That's an occurrence. A Ness is a miracle, something that we imagine unusual. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu's coming was not just a Ness, is something, you know, which it was a miracle the guy jumped down from the roof and he didn't get killed. That's a Ness. But when you say HaKadosh Baruch Hu appeared to us, and that was part of the reality.
But those are all miracles. There were constant miracles happening, the Ananei Kavo. The whole thing, but that was part and parcel of bringing us out of Mitzrayim to Eretz Yisrael. I guess it's a series of events, but when did the great Nisim happen to Am Yisrael in that time? Whatever you want to call
but
it.
That was that time, but then afterwards there were other Nisim.
Yeah, but can they ever compare? And
there's a Ness during that. Listen, you know, a guy can say the telephone with the waves going through the thing today is a total Ness. It's unbelievable. When you come to think of it, how many radio waves that you don't see? To me, I think it's a tremendous Ness. Where was it 100 years ago? Why did they have it 100 years ago?
They didn't understand how to make it happen.
But it's still a Ness. When if you could really think of it today, there are things today which you would tell people from 100 years ago of something. I'm using the phone as an example. They say, how do you mean wireless? What are you talking about wireless? Go to the time from Con Edison to now. It's a miracle that you could, I don't care what scientists you have. I say that each time period had its own miracles.
Okay.
That's all.
All right. I hear what you're saying.
But I guess they're talking about the magnitude of miracles.
It's also possible to say that, for some reason, we haven't really defined what miracles, what they define as miracles, which happened in the Shana Rishonim in the days of Rabbi Yehuda. We'll discuss, the Gemara's going to talk about that. But apparently nothing happened at all, or they didn't see any of God's hand somehow doing something which was beyond that which can be defined through nature or things of that nature. We'll get to that. So they're trying to really ponder this. They can't understand why Hashem provides miracles for them and not miracles for us. That's going to need some work, true, what that means. But nonetheless, they see that God somehow favored the previous generation over them in some capacity. And it can't be because of their amount of learning, because apparently we learned more mesechus. We learned more stuff than they did. Okay. Then, so not only that, but says the Gemara, "V'chi havi mati Rabbi Yehuda b'uksin." When Rabbi Yehuda would get to a section in Mesechtas Uksin, which is kind of interesting because the question that I just thought of is, it says that in the generation of Rabbi Yehuda, they only learned from Nezikin. Uksin is not found in Seder Nezikin. It's found in Seder, it's Tahara, so it talks about Tumah Tahara. There were certain sections that he just apparently just didn't understand. And the Gemara gives examples of the places where Behuda had was stumped. For example, in the case of Ha'isha Shekodeshes Yerek Bikadeira, a woman who is pressing vegetables in a pot. What? Picking, right, pickling in a pot. The Amri law, some say that the Mishnah, which Rabbi Yehuda had problems with, was Zesim Shikavshan Betarfehem, olives that are preserved, you said, right, with its leaves, Taharin. They're considered to be Tahar. And basically, as this Rashi discusses, which I think in tremendous length, discusses that it's possible that the same object, some of it could be Tameh, some of it could be Tahar, that not necessarily the whole item is Tameh, even though they're all connected to one another. For example, the Aleph, which may have a stem, it's possible that one part of it is Tameh, one part is Tahar, and the Mishnah over there says that that's what it is, that it's not necessarily, it's an all or nothing thing. So when Rabbi Yehuda heard this, Omar, he said, "Havius the Rabbi Shmuel kachazina hacha." I see the questions of Rav and Shmuel over here. And that's what we look in the Rashi of Havayus the Rabbi Shmuel kachazina hacha. Kolome has to say, "Tam ha-mishnayos alolu." The reason for these mishnayos kasha alai, they're very difficult to me. Kichol ha-kushios, like all the questions, shayushne rabosai, from the times of my Rebbeim, namely Rav and Shmuel, Miskashin Behen Bechol HaGemara. All the questions that they always asked, it's similar in difficulty, these particular Mishnayos. So, but the Gemara says that even though Rabbi Yehuda had difficulty learning these sections, even the great Rabbi Yehuda in his generation didn't necessarily understand it. But Anan, but we, Kamas Nisan Be'uksin Tleyasa Mesifta. We're learning Uksin in how many Shivas? Tleyasar 13. If we look at Tosus over here, Tleyasar Mesifta, which is the second to last Tosus on the page, the third wide line, Tleyasar Mesifta says Tosus, Yesh Mefarshim Tleyasar Yeshivos 13, Yeshivas Yesh Bonus Shibikian, that there are experts in this section, in this Mesifta, but Tleyasar Lapdavka, the truth is it doesn't mean literally 13. El Loshin, here go Gemara Kamo, Tleyos or Zuze Pshiti. That sometimes it uses this language as a language of a lot, an abundance.
I mean, it's an exaggeration.
It's an exaggeration, exactly. It doesn't literally mean there was 13 yeshivas, but there were an enormous amount of yeshivos that were studying this. It may not have been as much as 13, but it certainly was a whole lot.
More than one.
More than one, absolutely. But when it came to the generation of Yehuda, Rabbi Yehuda didn't really understand this. So when it came to the amount of learning, they only tackled a small amount of materials, the Masech, the Seder, from Seder Nezikin, specifically, but with Kabbalah, Mitzvah, and Babas. However, ourselves, we learned all of Shas, and we learned it in so many different yeshivas. So, nonetheless, even though we were so involved in learning Torah, nonetheless, says the Gemara, Be'ilu Rabbi Yehuda, Ki Havi Sholuf Chad Mistani, that when Rabbi Yehuda would even remove a single shoe, I'm going to push it up, when Rabbi Yehuda wanted to move remove one of his single shoes, and the reason why he did this was because it was a tinus, and this was one of the things that they would do during a fast, is that they would remove their remove their shoes. So what happened? Hopefully Rashi will say, Asimetra, rain will come. This is a sign, apparently sign of a velus. Is there a Rashi on this?
Sign of affliction. It's about a major fast day.
Right, there's no Rashi.
So of sharing the suffering of the community, it begin to rain. That the communities had no rain, so they would take off one shoe, which would show that they were the whole community of sufferings, and then it would start to rain.
Oh, that's right. That was in the generation of Judah. Doesn't sound like they only took off one shoe when they were hopping around. Right. They take off both shoes. But just as Yehuda began this whole level of Elus,
right,
he immediately started to reign. So as soon as Rabbi Yehuda had a little bit of beginning of this ceremony, Hashem immediately answered. And maybe is that a nace? It's not necessarily, that's the example the Gemara gives as a miracle. But it's not really a miracle, but it's that God's hand somehow is involved. You see that you're touched by the hand of God. You see Hashem is involved in your world. However, contrasting it, says the Gemara, that even though that's how it was in the generation of Rabbi Yehuda, when it comes to ourselves, Anan, Kamet Sarina Nafshin, we're mitzar ourselves. We're mispalel, we fast for days, our shoes are off. Sadachka Sabchinan, we're screaming out to God, and there's no one that pays any attention to us, or so it seems.
Right. Nobody answers us.
Right. So what's going on over here? And this is what's bothering Rav Papa. Rav Papa began on the very beginning of the Amud asking this question of Baye. I do not understand it. We have the learning. There's a lot of Torah going on, there's studying going on in numerous yeshivas. For some reason, Rabbi Yehuda, who apparently didn't know certain questions, how to answer certain questions, Hashem listens to whatever he needs immediately occurs. So why is this? So the Gemara answers as follows. Very fascinating. It has nothing, doesn't make, the simple explanation is, it doesn't make a difference how much learning you have. Depends on the type of person you are. Says the Gemara, this is the reason. Amar Leh, he said, Kamoi, the earlier generations, Havikam Masri Nafshayu HaKedushas Hashem. They're Moser Nefesh on being Kiddush Hashem. They gave up of themselves. They considered as though they themselves had no entity toward God. If they saw that Achil Hashem was happening, they ran to make sure that it would never occur, that it shouldn't occur. And in order to involve themselves in the Kiddush Hashem, to make sure that there's a Kiddush Hashem, they would do everything in their power, even if they're Moser Nefesh, to do so. Anan, but ourselves, Lo Masrina Nashin at Kedushas Hashem. We're not Moser Nefesh on Kedushas Hashem. And therefore, since we don't go that extra mile, so to speak, why should Hashem do this? Why should Hashem? But when it comes to Yehuda, who and his generation, that were always Moser Nefesh,
they went the extra mile.
They went the extra mile, so therefore Hashem will also provide Nisan, which goes above and beyond. So where do we find the earlier generations that there were Moser Nefesh of Kedushas Hashem? So you would imagine the Gemara could come up with numerous answers, numerous examples where a person maybe is challenged with, you know, their life, that they will have to give up their life if otherwise, you know, if they don't perform, they have to perform a certain crime or else they have to be killed. That would be a good example. A very dramatic example.
Well, it's like Kolev jumping into the Yam Suf until he was up to his
nose.
I mean, nationally good.
That would be a good example.
The Red Sea.
Those are great examples, right? Dramatic, throwing your life out there and this. But amazingly, the Gemara doesn't come up with any of those examples which you would think there would be many of. Yeah. Listen to the story the Gemara gives. It's very bizarre, if I can say this. Ki hod de Rav Adabar Ahava. It came to Rav Adabar Ahava, Chaz, who lived in this earlier generation, such as in the generation of Rabbi Yehuda. Rav Adabar Ahava, Chazilahi Kusis, that he saw a kusis, a non-Jewish woman, Dahavi Levisha, that she was wearing a garment called a karvlasa, b'shuk. A karvlasa, some actually say it was a red garment, and maybe it was a headband. It was not necessarily a cloak, could have been, which causes problems, as we'll see, what he did, but she was wearing it in the shuk in the marketplace. So Sabar, so what did he think? What did Rav Adabar Ahava think? He thought, the Bas Yisrael, that this was a Bas Yisrael, a Jewish girl, to be wearing red, it's a dispute. Which some people say that this garment was known to have shatnez in it, right? Or, and therefore, how could someone, a Jew, be wearing shatnez? Or,
after we learned the halacha, that if you find you're wearing shatnez in the shuk,
take it right off.
Right.
That's the shatnez for that.
And that's, this going a little bit ahead of ourselves, this is also the proof, if we recall a couple weeks back, that the Rambam says that not only do you have to take it off, but you have to actually cause it to be removed from someone else. Or at least that's the madrega of some, and those people,
right.
At least in that early generation, that's what they did. And this is the proof, according, assuming it was shatnez. Some people say it wasn't shatnez, it was really an issue of sneeze. Either way, so he got up, and he tore it off of her. He ripped it off. Unfortunately for him, Galu Milsa the Kusisi. It was revealed that it was a Kusis, a non-Jew. What business does he have ripping it off? If it was an issue of shatnez, Kusis is allowed to wear shatnez. And it was an issue of sneis.
Also, they don't have to worry about sneis.
Right. So, obviously, he made a huge blunder. He made a huge mistake. And because of this mistake, the Kusisi. Shamu Barba Meya Zuzi. They evaluated the loss of this garment, which he tore up, which was shredded into pieces. And because of this, he was fined, a very hefty fine, namely 400 bucks, 400 zuz. So Omerle, so maybe at the end, after the court case, after the verdict, he turned to this Kusis and said, Mashemach, what is your name? Maybe you have to write a check to her or something. So what's your name? So Amrele, so she said, Masson. That's my name, Masson. Whatever the name, interesting name. So Amrele, so he said back to her, Masson. Arba mea zuze shavya. $400, 400 zuz you are worth. $400 you have caused me to lose. So if we look in Rashi, Rashi says, why is it 400? Well, it was 400 how much it was assessed for. But what does that have to do with her name? So Rashi says, Dalid Meos, just a little bit toward the bottom. Beis Pamim, Beis Meos, because Meos is 200. So two times Mason is similar to the word of 200, and therefore, right, it's a similar root, and same word, and therefore he said her name twice. $200, Klomer Hashem Garmali. It was your name that caused this. Maybe they heard her name. And then they said, oh, you know, $400 is good. It's a befitting name. Lashon Acher, Maton is Lashon Hamtana, of being deliberate, of waiting. Im him Tanti, if I waited a little bit, Ta'isa Mishtaker Dal Miazuze, I would still be wealthy and still have my $400. So therefore, Mason comes from the word to wait. And to not jump before you do something. And therefore he said, oh, if I had only waited, then I would have been wealthy 400 zuz. So before we ask the obvious question, what on earth is this type of a story? This is the example of being Moshe Nefesh HaKadushas Hashem. So before we get there, let's look at this Rashi, which is a little bit above, where it says, Benizikin Havi, purposely out of order. Going way up, Benizikin Havi, Rashi says like this, Lo hayi gedolim b'chol Gemara, Shel Dalet Sdar, and we said that the earlier generation, they were not as well-versed in the other four Sdarim. There's a question why it says the four, because otherwise it says there's Shas, and they said they only know Nezikin, maybe we should say five. Ela Beklasa Babi, Shalom. They only knew the three Babas, right? Baba Kamim, Seba Basa, the High Milsa Nakh. So why are we bringing, why is this piece of Gemara right after the Gemara we had before? What was the Gemara we had before? So Rashi reminds us. Right, he says, "Behind Milsa Nakad Hacham Yishum Demayri Shemoser Nafsham Akadushas Hashem." Because this whole Gemara is talking about how a person has to sometimes forego their own honor and to be Moser Nefesh in order to make sure that a Kiddush Hashem, that mitzvahs are performed, did not chas v'shalom of theirs. And the Ad Hashna Ayri, up until now, we were also speaking, B'mishim Avaz Atzmo Al Kedushas Hashem, someone who humiliates themselves, in order to make sure that mitzvahs are performed, the Nadamaris Lishuk Kilayim Bashuk, who said this whole Gemara previously, of removing your shatnas, you're removing your clothes in the marketplace, even though it's embarrassing, but that's being Moser Nefesh al Kedushas Hashem. So therefore, this is another Gemara connected to the previous Gemara, which, as I said, that's why some of the Mepharshim want to use this example that the garment that he tore off of her was shatnas, which again is a nice flow from one Gemara to the next.
Right.
So the question again is, the Mepharshim deal with, but I didn't see it really inside so much, but I remember my Kalman from Baltimore asked a question in 1989 when I was learning this with him, why on earth is this the proper example? Why is this a valid example? And in fact, this actually is asked, and that is, if in fact he should have waited, so why is this an example of a good person? He made a mistake.
He wasn't really Mesiris Nefesh.
Right. Exactly, it wasn't Mesiris Nefesh,
really.
Apparently.
Right.
So they said it like this, that the greatness of the previous generation, the difference between their generation and our generation, is that when it comes to our generation, if we would see someone, we would start making cheshbon, which would say, well, maybe it's a Jew, maybe it's not a Jew, maybe it's not sneezed, and then you'd rationalize. However, when it came to the earlier generation, they didn't even have the thought process of just thinking. Rather, they immediately reacted, similar to Pinchas and Kanaim Pogimbo.
But that's not always a great thing, though.
Correct. But when it comes to a Kiddush Hashem, when Hashem's honor is at stake, I can't even hesitate. And that's the reason why he snapped so fast. Of course, he should have maybe, if he did delay, he would have saved $400. But that was in his bones, in his guts, that he could not wait, because when Hashem's honor was ever being compromised, he immediately had to react. He couldn't possibly hesitate. And that's why they give this example. Why they give this example? Why couldn't they give an example of a person who literally gave up their life, right?
That's
really Mesiris Nefesh. Which is real Mesiris Nefesh. And the answer, in which a lot of people didn't like, and is very questionable, this is what he said, not me, is that when it comes to that choice, giving up your life or worship an idol, you have this huge nisayon in front of you, and you could worship an idol and save your life. If you decide to be Moser Nefesh, you're sort of a tremendous madrega. But the reality is, you know this idea that worshiping an idol is something which is completely against your whole faith, something which you certainly should not do. So every single Jew should know that what is right, what's wrong. It's still a tremendous madrega to be Moser Nefesh. However, here, this is not just a one-time incident. This is a guy who just was walking in the middle of the street, and he was not confronted with a life or death situation. This was something which was in his everyday lifestyle and behavior. And therefore, this is an example of someone who's always Moser Nefesh, not when he has a gun to his head, but even when he's just walking around, even at that time, he's Moser Nefesh. So that's how he explained it. Not everyone likes that answer.
You can also say he's over Malbim Plechavera for Rabbim, in the way he embarrassed this woman in the Rabbim.
I mean, wouldn't that be a question?
But the question is, what is a Chil Hashem? What is a Kiddush Hashem? What's a Chil Hashem? Is a Chil Hashem, oh well, people are going to think bad about us Jews? Or is a Chil Hashem, a sin is occurring? There's a sin that's being committed.
But there was no sin occurring.
His mistake was, that was his mistake. That was his mistake. He thought there was an Aver that was being committed. He thought it was a Jewish girl, and she was doing something which was an Aver, whatever that was. Sneas, Shatnas, regardless, he saw that this was wrong.
Yeah,
this is a she's doing.
Are you a Jew?
She's doing. This is a Chil Hashem. Well, that's the idea of this earlier generation. They didn't even have the time to even ask the question, because for me to ask the question is another 3 seconds of a Chil Hashem, potential Chil Hashem, and therefore he'd be willing to even lose all this money on a slight chance that maybe this was a Jew, maybe it wasn't a Jew. He didn't care. He thought it was maybe a Jew, and it's a Chil Hashem, I have to make sure it's removed.
To put this into a modern context, supposing you're walking to Jew on Shabbos morning, or back to the Jew on Shabbos morning,
yeah.
And you see a woman walking, you think she's a Jewish woman, she's holding a cell phone and talking about it.
Right.
And you run over and say, put that thing down, you can't use it on Shabbos, so you bump it, knock it out of her hand.
thought you were going to talk about rocks or something.
You know, no, I mean, if you do something like that, you know, I would think that if then it turns out that you were doing this to an Italian girl, you know, this would be a little more show.
I think there's the key over here is in the story is that it's Rav Ada Bar Ahava, and that he certainly was most in Nefesh HaKedushas Hashem. Maybe on our lowly madrega that we're on,
we can't understand.
When we do things and we're saying, oh, I'm ripping this out because the Chil Hashem, is that really why I'm doing it?
No.
Maybe that's not why I'm doing it. Maybe I have my ulterior motives.
Those times compared to these times, you can't even compare. No, you can't compare what was in their mind of what a Chil Hashem would be versus today. I think it's a whole different.
But still, this is, with all the best intentions, it's doing something that's really not a right thing to do. It depends where it takes place. Is it Tel Aviv or is it Meir Shalom? Even Meir Shalom, I don't think they overreact sometimes. No, Meir Shalom, sometimes they make more chil Hashem by overreacting, is that the thing? You know, sometimes you can tell, you know, what do I say? You have to think of consequences.
That's right.
But on the other,
look before you leap. You know, just not chap. You got to really analyze it. You just can't just do what you want to do.
The other way of looking at it as well, it depends also who's the one that's embarrassing me. If, for example, it's a person who is not, you know, not, come on, you're, who are you? You think you're such a great person yourself? Then I'll be embarrassed. But if I have one like a Goli Ador that walks up to me and says, what are you doing? I know his true intentions are sincere. And therefore, I'm not going to be embarrassed. I shouldn't be embarrassed. Big Gadol wouldn't do something like that.
Sometimes you see in a lot of things, they can double handle entirely different than a low order.
All right, 100%.
So, okay. So anyway, that's how the Gemara comes up with this particular example. One other question that I often ask when about this particular piece of Gemara is that he asked the question, right, Papa said, I don't understand. How come the earlier generations have things happen for them, whatever? The later generation doesn't. Is it because of our learning? No, because look at what we do in our learning. We learn all shas. They, Rabbi Yehuda, only learns a small amount of material. He, all of his learning is in the Zikin.
That's it.
So the question is, does it make any sense? If, in fact, is it true Rabbi Yehuda's generation really knew so much less than our generation? And what exactly is going on? And when it came to the question in Uxin, it says, oh, there's all these questions, and we have 13 yeshivas, right? This is how I understand this. I believe that the generation of Rabbi Yehuda, the earlier generation, were more knowledgeable than the later generation. What do you mean? They're learning all these things? But that's not necessarily a positive
quantity
thing.
Quantity of quality.
Right, exactly. Because Rabbi Yehuda and his generation were able to focus on just a small amount of material, and they were able
and
to
know it well, know as it. Opposed to knowing a lot.
Quantity of quality.
Right, exactly.
Right. Because, what do you mean when it came to Oksin, he had all these questions? The fact that we don't have those questions does not mean that we knew it better. Maybe we didn't look at it on the same level as he did.
Or go as deep into the issue as he did.
Right, exactly. So the way I use this Gemara as a springboard when it comes to schools that often try to teach children at an earlier age than they should, Mishnah in third grade, Gemara in fourth grade. First of all, you have a Mishnah in Perkei Avos that says explicitly that when are you supposed to learn Chumash 5? When are you supposed to learn Mishnah 10? Gemara 15, right? Okay, it also says 18 to get married, but the reality is that there's clearly a time that you're supposed to learn Gemara, which is 15. So why are we starting to teach our kids when we're in their 8? Is it because they know more? No. The earlier generations were Moser Nefesh, which means they were able to sweat over a small amount of material, a small subject matter, and they would master it. And that was their greatness.
Need more time.
The later generations, they because of their inability to be able to focus on one thing, they need to spread out to all shas. Right. But really, their level of knowledge is limited. And therefore, I say that the fact that schools require people to learn, children to learn, before the Mishnah, which is the irony. The irony is, when do they start having the kids learn? I have to start teaching the kids Mishnah really early, when the Mishnah itself says you're supposed to wait until the 10.
Right.
And the Mishnah itself says you're supposed to wait until 15 for Gemara.
That's because they don't know the Mishnah.
Okay, so,
I don't think there's a yeshiva in America that doesn't teach start Gemara by 6th grade. Right?
But I don't look at that up. Why? Because we're smarter. It's because we have the inability to focus on Tanakh.
And they're able, their foundation was much stronger because they went deeper into each, every item that they learned. Right.
I started when I was in Crown Heights.
I started 6th grade Gemara.
I was 10.
10 till I went Gemara.
Gemara.
That's what I'm saying. So.
So the
we need to learn Mishnah, right? To the Gemara.
The Mishnah Perkei Avos is to tell us, we'll spend 5 solid years learning one subject. Learn Chumash, not well. Then 5 more years learning just Mishnah.
Right.
And then you can learn Gemara like it's nothing. It's easy.
I'll teach him to learn Tefillah first.
100%. That is not
what we didn't know. We don't even.
You didn't know what you were davening.
We didn't know what we were davening. We didn't know what Shmon Esri was.
100%.
We thought Tefillah was davening from starting from Modani and Rosh Hashanah. Not until years and years and years later, truthfully, did we ever learn the real true tefillah. Think of it. When did you learn that tefillah was the Shmon Esri? Not in the younger.
And what do all these things mean? I want to tell you something. That's one of the things. And I'm not saying anything, but like Shabbos morning, when Rabbi Lachman spent time with, he said, my eye, I said, I've been davening for 50 years. I don't know why I've been davening. Why do I say this? What is it? Where does it come from? This is something that really, like you're saying, should be taught the basic. To teach a kid daven. But what am I davening? That's what most kids don't daven. But if you explain to him, it's like, I was in YU years ago, I took a course on kinnis on the Tisha B'Av. What was the meaning of mean to me? For years, I'm not saying this.
I always implore the practicalities of the day-to-day.
Right.
More so, I call it ignorant, call me being ignorant.
No, you're not.
Of learning, I don't know what. I don't want to pick on subjects, but to me, it's more important to understand the basics.
You
know what's going on and why I'm going on, because otherwise, you know, it's...
Can't agree with you more.
It's slichus. Slichus is... Most people don't have the fuck...
Don't have the
zip right through
their... In high school, over the show, there was a rabbi in Washington, and he's the only one who knows him here, a fellow Rabbi Kanatowski. He taught us, we came into school in September.
BTA?
BTA. He never opened the Gemara in September. You know what he taught us? And to this day, when I do Shmon Esri, Rosh Hashanah and Kippur, he was the first one that taught us of Malchus, Ronius, and Shofus, and he went through the whole Shmon Esri and the whole Tekiyas and the whole thing, and you got a better understanding.
Yeah.
And today it's
fluffed over. How many black Gemara? Derek Harris does not talk, but he's done a million black Gemara. That's all.
Although today, I want to tell you something. Particularly, listen, look at years ago. Girls were pushed away from Gemara. When the first one who came out was Yeshiva Rafak, which I don't know if you know this. There were articles in all the Jewish papers and the Jewish presses, and the opposition for girls to learn Gemara. They were against it.
Right.
Central didn't have it.
I don't think Central taught Gemara.
The problem, as I'm trying to explain, is that, okay, great, the women, girls learn Gemara. I taught girls Gemara. The problem is that you have yeshivas, they learn Gemara, and then you push the kid to the corner and start asking questions about halacha. They don't know halacha.
Nothing.
Right.
They ask questions about Navi. They don't know Navi. 100%.
Right?
So, and even just Parsha, Chumash, they some...
It's the good eyes. Because we look at...
Let me ask you a different question.
We're
now go back to the basic... Things. Yeah, but what about even the basic things? They don't teach you.
Davening. What does that
mean? They don't teach you from...
From Bereshit, from Modani. Teach, what do you say, Modani? We're washing your hands. What does it mean? Where does it come from?
Right.
Why
that,
do we do
that
it?
Today? Yeah. They're doing today a little bit more. I don't know.
You know.
I have a 3-year-old granddaughter today who went to a little yeshiva here, this Lubavitch yeshiva, in the Five Towns. This fellow is this marvelous guy. I think that's Wolofsky.
Yeah.
I mean, kid's 2.5 years old.
and shows me how to wash in the morning.
But that's not the norm. That's the exception, unfortunately.
I don't know.
Yeah, it may be a little different in Israel.
See, another thing is that we have a principle of fork bar, and the question is that basically it's supposed to teach us how to live. And if you really learn a few masechta very carefully, you might learn more about how you should live than if you learn everything, you know, and you're baki with a whole bunch of stuff, but you really never. But what does this really mean? What does this imply? How does this imply to daily life?
Right.
You know, and so you could really see what somebody's going to learn the three babas and from that, dafka, because it's the things that deal with the zikim, and dafka is the things that don't tell you about things that are necessarily we could do, but just how to deal with your fellow man.
Right.
And if you learn from that enough of the principles and so on, you might learn more than somebody else who learns a whole bunch of
things. Today they stress dafyomi. Daf Yomi is very nice, and every 7 years you finish all the shots. But what are you learning?
Life.
What?
They're running.
I mean, how can you really, tell me in 7 years you can learn the whole Torah? I mean, yeah, there's some, you know, gonim, tzaddik, you know, that they have the capability. But most of the average Joe is learning the things. He takes his thing, okay, I learned, I went to
basketball. So they pick something up, and that's why they say, you say Hadron, you're going to come back to it again.
Yeah, but where are the basics, which is not taught to anybody?
But ideally what should happen is you learn all of these basics, and they're in there, and as you learn it, in your mind, something clicks around and say, you know, this is like this, and this is like that, and this compares to this, and unless you can do that and put it all together, you're really not going to learn it. If you just learn it all as if you're just reading a novel, you're not getting any place. That comparison is where the comparing this and something similar to this and another word that's similar to this, like we were talking about Vayikra with Lulalev, and we're talking about Karcha, and we're talking about Kar. And then when it occurred to me, and I think I sent you an email about this, that this Kar, the most common Kufresh in Vayikra is Korbanot. You know, and you look at that word, you can say it's kar and bane, you know, mikre, and then this is the son of mikre. That you giving the karban takes you out of the realm of nature and the teva, and brings you up to a level where you can be exempt from some of the things in the teva because it's a bane mikre. You know, but if you don't think about it in those terms, you just rush through it. What does it mean?
That's I believe that's the answer that Abaye is giving Rav Papa when he says that they are Mosi Nefesh and you're not Mosi Nefesh, because even in the question Rav Papa looked at his level of learning, he said, "Oh, this can't be it, because we learn more than they do," and I believe that's really part of the answer. So what Abaye is saying is, Abaye is saying that when they're learning it, they're Mosi Nefesh. They're learning it with all of their heart, all their soul, they're pouring themselves over it. When you're learning it, you go through shas. Of course, this is about Papa, who is, you know, I can't speak negatively about him, but nonetheless, that's what he's saying. That's what your generation represents. They're not Moser Nefesh. Even when it comes to the learning, they're not Moser Nefesh. Rather, they fly through.
We had the Daf Yomi here, how was it? A year and a half ago? 2 years ago? When was it? So,
yeah.
Now, after that, it was tremendous in the garden. I went to Israel, and they had similar thing over there, but it was nothing like over here. I was very surprised.
Yeah. So what's the reason?
So they told me, what's your big deal? There are a lot of people that are not learning Daf Yomi. They have Shiur. They're learning in B'yuyim every night.
Exactly.
They don't need the Daf Yomi. They're learning themselves without the Daf Yomi.
But not the not Daf Yomi. It has a lot of positive aspects.
Yeah, but if you're not going to learn B'yuyim, so...
No. Okay, we're not going to be able to finish. We can maybe go through this Gemara just to hear it. A lot of questions on it. We'll pick it up next time. But the Gemara says as follows, just for a few minutes. Kidol havi ragel de havi ka'ozel v'yosav ashar de tefil. There's a lot of questions on this, but at least we'll go through the Gemara, and then we'll maybe come up with some of the questions. We'll address them next week. Rav Gidol, he was accustomed that he would often be sitting ashar de tefil by the gateway where women would immerse themselves in the mikvah. Armulahu, and he would say to them, Hachit Tvil of Hachit Tvil. They would say, you should be toivel this way, make sure you don't have a chatzitza, no, you're doing it wrong, you should do it that way, which is pretty amazing, which sounds like he's actually watching these women in the mikvah. Right, so Omer le Rabbanan, they said, lo kam stakmi mar mi yitzahara? Don't you have, aren't you afraid of yitzahara? So Omer lehu, she said, I'll tell you, damim ba'apik kaki chiyori, these women are compared to me as white geese, as Rashi says, avosim levon. Therefore I have no yitzahara for them. No yitzahara whatsoever. And therefore it's not a problem. Rabbi Yochanan, that's story number one. Story number two. Rabbi Yochanan, the Havi Ragul, the Havi Ka'azel, the Yosef, the Shardit Feel. And that Rabbi Yochanan, the beautiful, the handsome Rabbi Yochanan, also used to hang out by women's mikvahs. Omar, and he used to say, why did he do this? Not to teach them how to immerse themselves and say, do it this way, do it this way. Rather, Kisal Kon Beno Israel, the Asim Tefillah, that the women, when they get up from their tefillah and now they're tahara, they can now go back to their husbands. Mistakwin be, before they leave, they'll get a nice glance at my beauty. Benavil Zar Deshpiri Kavasi. And it should be that they should be zocha to have children who are as beautiful and handsome as me. Okay. Now, obviously, does that mean physically handsome or spiritual? Okay. Amrle Rabbanan, so the Rabbanan asked him a question. Lo kam stakmi mar mi ayin bisha. Aren't you afraid of an ayin bisha, of an ayin hara? Right? People are going to look at how beautiful you are, they're going to start talking, wow, that's this really handsome guy. It's an ayin hara. Why do you want an ayin hara? So Rabbi Yochanan had an answer for that too. Amrul who said, "Ana mizar de Yosef kasi. I come from, descend from Yosef inside. What's so special about being connected to Yosef? The l'shalta ba'enai bisha, because Yosef was not affected by the evil eye. The chesed, as the pasuk says, ben poras Yosef, ben poras oli oin, that the son of the fruit of the vine, Yosef, the son of the fruit of the vine, which is on the eye." The Omar Rabbi Avo, I'll tikri ali ayin el oli oyin. We won't read on the eye, but rather above or beyond the eye. That Yosef was not affected by the ayin hara. Yosef Rabbi Chanina Omar Mahacha v'yidgul arov b'ker ba'aretz. The famous bracha that was given that you were comparable to the fish. Ma dogim, just like fish, shebiyam. Ma'i mechasim alehem ein ayin hara shalat. This man, just like the water covers, and there's no ayin hara upon them. So av zara shel Yosef ein ayin hara shletes behem. So there's no yitzhara hara on Yosef either. Vibosema ayin shel ratzel lezon b'mashena shelo. The eyes which did not want to derive any benefit from that which was not his, namely Eshes Potiphar. Ein ayin hara shletes bo. The ayin hara does not have any control over him as well. So one of the questions, we'll remember this Gemara, which we'll stop here. We're going to ask the question that's interesting, that when it came to Rabbi Gidol, they asked him, aren't you afraid of the Yitzhara? Well, they didn't ask, are you afraid of an Ayin Hara? When it came to Rabbi Yochanan, they said, are you afraid of an Ayin Hara? But now the Yitzhara, the question is why, so we'll pick that up next week. We'll stop here.